ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, colleagues leap to the Prime Minister's defence after Benjamin Netanyahu calls him a weak leader. Also, the federal government announces a $2 billion program to divert kids with autism from the NDIS. And a crucial review of childcare in Victoria finds centres are putting profits before the safety of children.
And it says, hang on a second, what we really need to think about is we need governments to take greater responsibility, doing things like making sure that it's working with Children Check is connected.
The Prime Minister's colleagues have leapt to his defence after the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu labelled him a weak leader and accused him of abandoning Australian Jews. The comment follows Mr Albanese's announcement that Australia will recognise a state of Palestine at the UN next month. With Australia's relationship with Israel in crisis, some leaders of Australia's Jewish community have described Mr Netanyahu's criticism of his counterpart unhelpful and undignified. Rachel Mealy reports.
After being attacked by Benjamin Netanyahu on Twitter, Anthony Albanese chose not to enter the chat.
Oh, I don't take these things personally.
But the scathing social media post from Israel's Prime Minister was a direct personal attack on the Prime Minister.
History will remember Albanese for what he is, a weak politician who betrayed Israel and abandoned Australia's Jews.
The rise in tensions between the two leaders comes in the wake of the cancellation of an Australian visa for the far-right Israeli politician Simcha Rothman and comes a week after the Australian government said it would recognise a Palestinian state. Anthony Albanese declined to join the slanging match.
Well, I treat leaders of other countries with respect. I engage with them in a diplomatic way. Prime Minister Netanyahu and met with him over the phone. We had a long discussion prior to the cabinet meeting, which was held last Monday morning. At that time, I gave Prime Minister Netanyahu a clear indication of my view and Australia's view.
But while the Prime Minister might have kept his hands clean today, his Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke wasn't afraid of entering the fray.
Strength is not measured by how many people you can blow up or how many children you can leave hungry. Strength is much better measured by exactly what Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has done, which is when there's a decision that we know Israel won't like, he goes straight to Benjamin Netanyahu. He has the conversation, he says exactly what we're intending to do, and has the chance for the objections to be made person to person. And then having heard them, makes a public announcement and does what needs to be done.
Opposition leader Susan Lee says Australia's relationship with Israel is in tatters.
While, of course, our Prime Minister, whoever that may be, should be respected, what has happened is that the relationship is deteriorating and that failure is becoming apparent. Because respect goes both ways. And the series of events that we've seen in the relationship between Israel and Australia are regrettable.
Alex Rivchen is the co-CEO of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. He says Tony Burke and Benjamin Netanyahu have both gone too far.
So we're calling upon both governments to remember what's at stake, to ensure that calm heads prevail, and to conduct their matters of state privately, diplomatically, and with respect for the long-standing relationship between the two countries.
He says he doesn't agree with the decision to cancel Simcha Rothman's visa to Australia.
This person is a pretty fringe political figure in Israel. His political party most recently polled at about 2.5%. And I don't believe that there's a serious case to be made that his arrival in this country to speak at synagogues to those who want to come along and listen to him would have upended public order in this country. I think it was a mistake to deny him entry. And again, this is one of the issues that should have been raised privately by the Israeli government with our government, and the matter should have been transacted and dealt with at that level.
Alex Rifkin from the Executive Council of Australian Jury. That report from Rachel Mealy. As the federal government works to rein in spending on the National Disability Insurance Scheme, it has today announced a new program to divert children with autism and developmental delays from the scheme. The Minister for Disability and the NDIS, Mark Butler, told the National Press Club today that half of all new participants are aged under nine and have those conditions. He confirmed $2 billion will be allocated in the budget for what's to be called the Thriving Kids Program. Parents and advocates for children with autism are anxiously waiting for more details on the change. Joanna Crothers has the story.
During his National Press Club speech today, the NDIS Minister Mark Butler had this message for the parents of children with autism or developmental delays struggling to get onto the NDIS.
They love their children. They want the best for them. They're desperate. Absolutely desperate, I know, to get their children diagnosed because we've made it the only way they can get help.
But Mark Butler says the NDIS isn't the best place for all those families to get that care. Just under half of NDIS participants are children under 15, and that number rose again last quarter, according to the federal government. Since the scheme began, the number of people accessing it has mostly stabilised, except in the area of developmental delay and autism.
Tens and tens of thousands of young children with mild to moderate developmental delay or autism are on a scheme set up for permanent disability. I doubt very much that that is what most of their parents really wanted or expected, but it's all they've had available.
Instead, a new scheme designed specifically for children with mild to moderate developmental delays or autism will be diverted away from the NDIS to the new program called Thriving Kids. It will roll out from July next year and will focus on increased support and interaction with GPs, early learning centres and other community health supports.
We'll examine the creation of a new Medicare item for bulk billed three-year-old health checks to pick up any developmental concerns at that crucial age for referral for appropriate support. Improved decision-making tools for health professionals and better workforce training on child development will help create a stronger system of supports for kids and for their parents.
Nicole Rogerson is the CEO of Autism Awareness Australia. She says lots of parents currently accessing the NDIS will be worrying about what this means for their families. But she's optimistic those most effective won't stop receiving funding.
They'll think, oh, this just sounds like lipstick on a pig, you know, and I understand that would be anxiety-inducing. But I did not hear the minister today say, you know, kids are out by a certain date. I don't think that's the intent here. At the moment, we are giving a little bit to a lot of children, and the children who have real need are not getting what they need. So this isn't sustainable for the scheme. It's not a good outcome for children with autism.
Professor Alison Lane is the director of the Olga Tennison Autism Research Centre in Melbourne. She says the announcement is a welcome one. However, the government needs to recognise autistic children will have lifelong needs.
It's really important that in this announcement that there's not a temptation to diminish the very real needs of children and families whose children may be autistic or have mild to moderate developmental delays. Those needs are very real and they are seeking support at extraordinary rates, as pointed out in Minister Butler's speech, and those supports need to continue in some form for them. But I also think it's important to recognise that autistic children will have lifelong needs. So the thinking beyond a Thriving Kids program also needs to be considered at this point, that you know, once a child may have graduated, if you like, from this new proposed program, that there needs to be some thought given to what the supports will be available to them beyond that time. So, you know, these are lifelong needs and supports that these children and families will have.
The Thriving Kids program is designed to be nationally consistent, and the Commonwealth has indicated it wants to work with the states and territories to determine how it will operate.
That report from Joanna Crothers. An urgent child safety review commissioned by the Victorian Government has concluded the pursuit of profits by childcare centres is putting children at risk. The inquiry was prompted by shocking allegations of abuse in centres, including those against a Melbourne man who's been charged with more than 70 offences, including child rape. The Victorian Government is promising to accept all of the review's recommendations. They were released this afternoon and include establishing an independent regulator for the sector, surprise inspections of childcare centres, and stricter regulation of the Working with Children Check scheme. Kimberly Price reports.
Multiple allegations of childcare and misconduct across Victoria have shaken the early childhood industry. In response, Premier Jacinta Allen commissioned a rapid review into the sector in June, and today it's been released.
And the recent allegations of horrific abuse across the childcare system has exposed a system that simply isn't working. And this sickens me. It sickens me as Premier. It also sickens me as a mum.
Chaired by former South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill and senior government staffer Pamela White, the review made 22 recommendations targeting all aspects of the Early Childhood Education and Care, or ECEC, system. It's designed to stop predators accessing childcare work, and if they do, it should have the ability to quickly detect and exclude them.
Today we announce that we are accepting all of the 22 recommendations contained in this review. This review will reform child safety practices.
The Premier is urging other states and territories to make reforms to overhaul the national childcare framework.
There are actions that can't just be taken by Victoria alone. Indeed, in fixing these quality and child safety issues, it identifies that it is a national system that requires a national response, which is why the Minister and I will continue to work with our partners in Canberra, to work with the federal government and indeed other state and territory governments.
Caroline Crozer Barlow is the Chief Executive of the Front Project, an organisation advocating for children and families in the early childhood system. She welcomed the findings.
The thing I really liked about the report, however, is that it sort of asks, how did we get here? And it says, hang on a second, what we really need to think about is we need governments to take greater responsibility for making sure that we have a high quality ECEC system.
A key recommendation of the review is to strengthen working with children's checks, with all applicants required to undertake child safety training, and it will be easier to revoke someone's working with children's check.
Doing things like making sure that it's working with children check is connected with something called the reportable conduct scheme. Bringing those things together is really important because it means it has live intelligence about actual individuals all the time about things that are happening.
Caroline Crozer Barlow believes the rapid review's findings should give families confidence in the direction of the childcare sector.
I hope that they realise that the vast majority of educators and teachers working in the early childhood sector work in that sector because they care deeply about children getting the best start in life. I hope that they realise that now governments are really leaning in to make sure that they are supporting that and also leaning in to make sure that they weed out anyone who isn't committed to that vision.
Professor Daryl Higgins is a director of the Child Protection Studies Institute at Australian Catholic University. He believes the recommendation for a National Early Childhood Reform Commission would streamline critical childcare information.
Taking it out of this kind of convoluted and overlapping system of states and territories having responsibility for our processes, not just of setting working with children check pre-screening processes, but also the accountability for hearing about reportable conduct. So adults in the system who are engaging in behaviour that is not consistent with safety and quality care.
Professor Higgins would like to see more federal government reforms, including appointing a minister for children.
Early childhood education and care is almost like the canary in the coal mine for chorus on this, that we don't have as yet the political leadership across jurisdictions to be able to drive the kind of changes that we really need to see here. So I'm hoping that this will be, you know, early signs of what might be a promising new direction in our country towards the valuing of children and ensuring their safety.
The first recommendations from the review will be introduced to Victorian Parliament next week.
Kimberly Price. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, the Prime Minister visits South Australian coastal communities affected by the catastrophic marine algal bloom. Former Liberal Party staffer Bruce Lehrman is back in court, this time for an appeal against the judgment in his failed defamation case against Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson. Last year, Federal Court Judge Michael Lee found Mr. Lehrman wasn't defamed when the Network 10 program The Project broadcast an interview with his former colleague Brittany Higgins, who alleged she'd been raped in Parliament House in 2019. In his judgment, Justice Lee ruled it was more likely than not that Mr. Lehrman had raped Ms. Higgins. Mr. Lehrman has always maintained his innocence, and there have been no findings made against him in a criminal case. Our reporter Patrick Bell is following the appeal of the defamation case that's underway in the Federal Court in Sydney. Patrick, what are the grounds of Bruce Lehrman's appeal?
Well, Bruce Lehrman, of course, sued over the episode of The Project in February 2021, in which Brittany Higgins detailed her rape allegation in an interview with Lisa Wilkinson. Now, Justice Michael Lee made a judgment in this case last year and found on the balance of probabilities that Bruce Lehrman had raped Brittany Higgins at Parliament House. And he came to that finding because, in his view, Brittany Higgins was so intoxicated that she was incapable of consenting to sex, and Bruce Lehrman was indifferent as to whether he had consent or not. That is part of what is framing Bruce Lehrman's appeal, because the episode of The Project alleged that Ms. Higgins had repeatedly said no, that she'd verbally refused consent, and that Mr. Lehrman had ignored that. Now, there's a slight difference there in the detail of that, and that is what Mr. Lehrman's legal team has picked up on in this appeal. They're ultimately trying to strike out the truth defence that Network 10 had established. That, of course, is a matter of some contention, because in defamation law, it's the substantial truth of the imputations that need to be proven. And so there is contention as to whether that threshold has still been met. Bruce Lehrman has also argued that he deserved more than $20,000 damages, which is what Justice Lee found he would be entitled to in the event that he won the case. And that's because the broadcast was seen by hundreds of thousands of people, and it was a very serious allegation.
Patrick, just remind us who the respondents are in this case, and have they outlined their arguments as yet?
Yes, Network 10 is the first respondent in this case, as is Lisa Wilkinson, who was named separately in the original statement of claim as a defendant. Now, Network 10's barrister Matthew Collins has pushed back on the notion that there really is a very much distinction between what Bruce Lehrman's lawyer had described as a violent rape or a non-violent rape. He'd argued that that distinction is based on some antiquated notions that really aren't reflective of the contemporary understanding of what rape or sexual assault is. And so on that basis, they've argued that substantial truth of the imputation has been established and the truth defence should remain intact. There were similar arguments made by Ms. Wilkinson's lawyer, Sue Chrysanthu. She's also gone to the second defence that had been put forward in this case, and that was the qualified privilege defence. defence. Now, this provides an additional defence to defamation even where substantial truth has not been proven. It's one Justice Lee rejected, but Ms. Chrysanthou has argued that he ignored various points of evidence that were relevant to this issue, including the level of public interest on the day the broadcast was published, given that it had come after two articles by Samantha Maiden on news.com.au and after debate and discussion of this story in Question Time in Parliament House.
And the court heard today that Bruce Lehman hasn't been able to retain the lawyer he wanted. What was the court told about that?
Yes, his lawyer, Zali Burrows, effectively began with an apology and asking for a bit of patience from the court because the senior counsel, Guy Reynolds, who had previously been suggested as someone who might take on this case, hadn't been retained because Bruce Lehman could not afford him. Now, Zali Burrows has accepted that she does not have the same level of experience as the two silks who are on the other side of the bar table. And so she's effectively asked for a bit of leeway and said she's doing the best she can. She did have an exchange with the bench this morning around when she could make some of the substantive arguments in her submissions. She wanted to reserve most of those for the reply, and she was told that's not possible because that's not procedurally fair to the other side. And so she's ended up on some of those grounds relying largely on her written submissions. She will be back tomorrow for that reply, so we'll have to see then how extensive that is.
Our reporter Patrick Bell, and the appeal hearing in the Federal Court in Sydney continues tomorrow. On a visit to South Australia today, the Prime Minister has announced extra funding and the establishment of a new testing facility to help fight the state's disastrous marine algal bloom. After breaking out in March, it's now grown to more than 4,500 square kilometres in size, and marine life has been decimated. Luke Radford reports.
It was a whiplash tour of South Australia for the Prime Minister today. After a quick visit to Kangaroo Island to meet with fishermen affected by the algal bloom, Anthony Albanese pledged more support for SA.
Let's not get into semantics here. This is a significant event. This is a very significant event, and it's something that requires a response. Just like droughts require a response, bushfires require a response.
That response includes more than $6 million of new funding to combat the algal bloom. $4 million of that is for local government, for grants to assist those local communities that have been impacted, and the other $2 million for better monitoring of marine heatwaves by the CSIRO. The government has been repeatedly criticised by the opposition for being slow to respond to the disaster, but the Prime Minister aggressively rejected that today.
Climate change is real. There is a real impact. There is nothing that has been suggested to us by any of the scientific community saying if government had done this, this algal bloom would not have occurred. If there is something, please let me know what it is and ask the question, and then I'll respond.
The PM also announced changes to the Regional Investment Corporation so its funds could be made available for people affected by the algal bloom. What exactly that means, we don't know, because the Prime Minister didn't say and the government hasn't responded to the ABC's requests for further information. Meanwhile, those whose livelihoods have been impacted say any further support is welcome, like commercial fisherman Robert Barrett, who met with the Prime Minister this morning.
None of us know, do we? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen this summer. I mean, there's still a bloom in the water. You can still see the greenish tinge, but there's signs of fish coming back. So I just sort of said, listen, we just need to be supportive for, you know, 6, let's hope not 12 months. But, and he was prepared to listen, and he agreed, so.
Meanwhile, the government has partnered with South Australian company Agilex to open a national testing facility in Adelaide. Until now, testing for the Brevi toxins produced by the algae had been undertaken in New Zealand at great cost and delaying the results. Mike Steer is the Executive Director of the South Australian Research and Development Institute.
The fact now that we've got a laboratory on our doorstep to rapidly undertake analysis of the Brevi toxins that are accumulating in our oyster, cockles and mussel aquaculture ventures is fantastic, because it's going to absolutely streamline our delivery on a weekly basis. It's also going to give us greater scope to undertake more R&D, particularly around the sources of Brevi toxin.
For now, the government's focus is shifting to the medium to long term. The algal bloom was initially predicted to break up during winter, But that hasn't happened. And now authorities are scrambling to plan for the warmer months ahead, when the algae could start to spread again. Here's South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas.
So what we have to do is account for all possibilities. That makes the work quite complex. It has a number of areas. It has environmental restoration recovery considerations. It has coastal economy and economic considerations, but also the issue associated with people's mental health that we have to contemplate, because people go to the beach for a sense of relief in every respect. So there are a few different facets to the plan that we are actively working on. We won't be announcing the summer plan until such a point that it's completed and necessary.
The Premier says if the additional algae summer plan is needed, it will require further federal support.
Luke Radford reporting from South Australia. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Volodymyr Zelensky has been to the White House before in what became an infamous encounter with Donald Trump. This time he took an entourage of European leaders as backup as the US president pushes for a quick end to the war in Ukraine. Today, a former US ambassador to Ukraine, John Herbst, on why it could actually be a step forward towards peace. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.